Have you ever been in that situation where you just couldn't get the information you needed? Or maybe even worse, you were just drowning in data, irrelevant stuff, looking for that one critical detail.
Oh, absolutely. It's so frustrating.
It really is, isn't it? Whether you're, prepping for a big meeting, trying to understand something new, or just keeping up how information flows, it's everything.
It really is foundational.
So today we're doing a deep dive into exactly that. How information moves, or really importantly, how it doesn't move inside organizations. And our guide here is Ron Westrum. We're drawing a lot from his really insightful article, The Study of Information Flow, A Personal Journey.
And our mission really is to unpack why this flow isn't just about, say, efficiency. It's about the core safety, the basic functioning of any group. Could be your small team, could be a huge global company. We're going to explore Westrum's pretty surprising ideas about how an organization's culture basically shapes its information world and, what that actually means for you.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Ron Westrum, he didn't exactly start out looking at corporate safety or org charts. Get this. His early fascination was with, UFOs and meteorites.
That's right. It's quite a story. In the early 70s, his first research was on what he called anomalous events.
Anomalous events.
And what he found was pretty profound. He saw scientists often had these biases, especially something he named the fallacy of centrality. This sort of ingrained belief that they, the experts, would naturally be the first to know about anything unusual.
But they weren't always.
No. In reality, they often had no idea or were just left out completely. Their own ideas, their biases, were actually blocking the flow of information.
And that led him to this idea of hidden events, right? Things that are like widely experienced but really well hidden.
Exactly. He used a phrase from Raymond Moody, and he pointed to something called pluralistic ignorance as a key reason.
Pluralistic ignorance.
Yeah.
What's that exactly?
It's that reluctance we have to report something if it seems like nobody else is reporting it. You think, it must just be me.
Like the horrifying case of Jimmy Savile's victims. So many people experienced abuse, but for years they felt alone, hesitant to speak up.
Precisely. It's a deeply unsettling thought. How many important hidden events might be happening right now because people don't feel safe enough to be the first one to say something?
Makes you wonder.
It does. And Westrum's focus shifted quite a bit during a sabbatical in 1978-79. He took a forensic medicine course and learned about the battered child syndrome.
Another one of those terrible hidden events.
Yes, exactly. It resonated strongly with his framework. Then, sort of by chance, he started reading articles about airliner cockpit social dynamics.
The connection to safety starts there.
That was the pivot. It linked his thinking on hidden events to technological accidents.
And then other work really helped shape this new direction, like Perot's normal accidents.
Yes, absolutely. Perot's book and James Reason's work on human error were crucial. It's like all these different pieces started clicking together for him.
Forming a bigger picture.
Exactly. And the real breakthrough came in October 1988. He was at a World Bank conference, and he had this string of insights, as he put it. And that's what led directly to his foundational three cultures model. It's become incredibly influential since then.
So after this really winding journey, Westrum comes up with this way to classify organizational cultures, specifically based on how information flows. And it's a model that just took off, didn't it? Used everywhere.
It really did. He laid out three ideal types, let's call them, each with a very different way of handling information.
Okay, what are they?
So first you have pathological organizations. The main feeling there, fear, threat,
Not good.
not good at all. People hoard information, they withhold it. Sometimes they even twist it, for political reasons or just to make themselves look better.
And the leaders?
Leaders are focused on themselves, climbing the ladder, getting perks and privileges, perquisites, as Westrum called them. Their own gain comes first.
Okay, that's pathological. What's next?
Next are bureaucratic organizations. Here, the focus shifts to protecting departments, protecting your turf.
Right, the silos.
Exactly. Doing things by the book. But it's often their department's book, their own rules.
So leaders are focused on their department, maybe not the whole organization.
That's the tendency, yeah. Departmental goals can sometimes overshadow the bigger picture, the overall mission.
Got it. And the third type.
The third is generative organizations. These are really mission-focused. Good performance, achieving the shared goals. That's what matters most.
So a healthier environment.
Much healthier. They actively encourage what Westrum called a level playing field. There's respect for the person receiving the information. The organization's mission is number one for the leaders.
Okay, pathological, bureaucratic, generative, that seems pretty clear. But I know others, like James Reason and Patrick Hudson, suggested expanding this to five types later on. What did Westrom think about that?
Yeah, he wasn't really sold on it. He felt there wasn't strong enough evidence, theoretically or empirically, for five distinct types. He saw his three types more as points on a continuum, the Westrom continuum, you could call it.
Ah, so not rigid boxes, but more like a scale.
Exactly. You could definitely have organizations that fall somewhere between these points.
Mm.
But he believed that core distinction between pathological, bureaucratic, and generative remains really powerful for understanding how organizations work.
That makes sense. So now that we have these three cultural types clear, let's talk about how they actually react when things go wrong, when unusual or difficult information surfaces.
Mm.
Westrom had six ways they might respond, right?
That's right. Six typical responses. Suppression, encapsulation, public relations, local fix, global fix, and profound inquiry.
And these tie back directly to the cultures.
Directly. In those pathological environments, what do you think is most common?
Suppression. Shooting the messenger.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Exactly. Or just ignoring bad news altogether.
Yeah.
Bureaucratic places tend towards encapsulation, keeping the problem contained within one department.
Keeping it quiet.
Or using public relations to manage how it looks externally. They also often go for local fixes, patching the immediate problem but not digging deeper.
Okay. And the generative ones?
Generative cultures are much more likely to go for global fixes, looking for the same problem elsewhere in the organization, and even profound inquiry.
Meaning?
Meaning they really try to understand the deep root causes and fix them properly permanently.
So listening to all this, it becomes really obvious why information flow isn't just a nice to have, it's critical.
Absolutely critical. For two main reasons Westrom highlights. First, when information doesn't flow, it puts the organization's safety and basic functioning at risk. Simple as that.
And second.
Second, the way information flows acts as this incredibly powerful indicator of the organization's overall health. It tells you a lot about what's really going on under the surface.
Okay, so if flow is crucial, what makes information good information in this context?
Good question. Westrom points to three key things. First, relevance, meaning it has to answer the receiver's questions, not just what the sender feels like sending. That right there shows teamwork, understanding each other's needs.
Okay, relevance. What else?
Second, timeliness. Information has to arrive when it's needed to actually make a decision. Now.
Right, too late, and it's useless.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It lets the organization stay inside the loop, as Colonel John Boyd would say. You need to be able to act fast based on current reality.
Makes sense. And the third?
Third is clarity or usability. It needs a high signal-to-noise ratio.
Cut through the clutter.
Precisely. Westrom used the analogy of a bill of lading. You know, the list that tells you what's in a shipment. Good information needs context. Why was this sent? How reliable is it? How does it fit in? Without that, it's just noise. Unusable.
Relevance, timeliness, clarity. Okay, and when organizations get this right, you see some amazing things happen, right? You mentioned some examples of information champions.
Yes. Think about John Hubolt at NASA during the Apollo program.
The lunar orbit decision.
Exactly. He wasn't initially a major player, but he was convinced that lunar orbit rendezvous was the only way to get to the moon in time. He persisted, pushed his idea, even after being rejected initially.
And why did it work?
Because NASA, driven by that powerful vision of landing on the moon, had fostered a pretty generative environment. It allowed this crucial, maybe unpopular idea from a lower-level engineer to eventually get heard and adopted. It saved them years and huge amounts of money.
Incredible. And you also mentioned Colonel Jack Broughton.
A very powerful story. F-106 ejection seat back in the 60s. It was defective. 14 pilots had died.
14? Oh, my God.
Yeah. Broughton, the squadron commander, basically put his career on the line. He confronted a four-star general demanding they ground the planes.
That takes guts. Could have been seen as insubordination.
Absolutely. Gross insubordination.
Mm.
But his passion, his loyalty to his pilots, it broke through. The general listened. The planes were grounded. The seats were fixed. Lives were saved because critical information driven by conviction forced its way up.
These examples really show it.
They perfectly illustrate Westrom's idea of information flow, or IF. Think of it like a score, a measure of how well an organization can actually use the information it possesses.
So pathological is low IF.
Right. Bureaucratic is middling IF. And generative organizations have high IF. They're much better at leveraging what they know.
Okay, so it's becoming really clear now. Information flow isn't just about passing messages. It's like a window into the soul of the organization.
That's a great way to put it. It reflects so much about the fundamental health. First off, it shows the level of cooperation and trust.
How so?
Well, where trust exists, information is shared freely. People help each other out. But if there's no trust, like in pathological places, information becomes a weapon, doesn't it? A political tool.
Used to help friends, hurt rivals.
Exactly. And that's why leaders whose walk matches their talk are so important. They build the trust needed for people to report those latent pathogens, as James Reason called them, the hidden problems waiting to cause trouble.
Like in that Tokaimura nuclear accident you mentioned, lack of trust led to dangerous workarounds.
Precisely. Lack of consultation, lack of trust. Terrible consequences. Second, information flow reflects the quality of decision-making.
Stands to reason. Better info, better decisions.
Right. Good decisions need complete information, and they need to be open to scrutiny. If a bad decision is made in a transparent place, it's more likely to be spotted and maybe fixed.
But in closed-off environments.
Decisions are often worse, and they get covered up. Westrom mentions Mayor Giuliani's denial about his false accusations against Richard Murphy. Instead of admitting a mistake, the focus was on discrediting Murphy publicly. That's typical pathological behavior, unfortunately.
Protecting the leader over the truth.
Sadly, yes. And third, maybe the most telling thing, information flow reflects the quality of life in the organization.
How people actually feel working there.
Exactly. Good flow usually means a better place to work. Think about Southwest Airlines Generative. Promotes from within, consistently popular. Contrast that with, say, early Microsoft or GM, promoting only an elite, or American Airlines, which had a notoriously pathological culture for a long time.
And you mentioned the USS Benfold.
Yeah, Captain Michael Abershoff's transformation of that ship is a classic case study. He took it from pathological to generative. Information started flowing, long-standing problems got solved, and morale, the quality of life for the crew, just soared.
So how exactly do these generative cultures make that happen? How do they support that flow?
It really comes back to those core things. Trust, focusing everyone on the mission, which helps people put aside personal or departmental agendas and creating that level playing field.
De-emphasizing hierarchy.
Right. Making it okay for information to cross boundaries, silos, status levels, creating a boundaryless organization effectively.
Are there challenges, though, even in good cultures?
Oh, sure. You always have to be vigilant, reinforce the values. But what's powerful is seeing examples of information flowing across those boundaries when it works well.
Like the Boss Kettering story.
Yes. The famous engineer listening to a low-status painter who pointed out a ship's propeller looked too big. Kettering respected that faint signal, investigated, and the painter was right. It shows the value of listening, regardless of rank.
Listening to faint signals. I like that.
And then there's Wernher von Braun's bottle of champagne story. Classic example.
Tell me about that one.
An engineer admitted causing a spark during missile prep. It could have potentially implicated him if the missile failed later, but von Braun didn't punish him.
Yeah.
He sent him a bottle of champagne. Publicly said that absolute honesty is non-negotiable in something as complex as building missiles. He rewarded candor, knowing it was essential.
Wow. That sends a powerful message.
It really does, fostering total honesty.
Okay, but now, here's where it gets really interesting, and frankly, quite dark. We have to contrast these positive examples with how badly information flow breaks down in pathological organizations. What drives that breakdown?
Well, a lot of it stems from that atmosphere of fear and dread we talked about. Mm-hmm. People are afraid, so they minimize risks, they hide problems.
Don't want to be the bearer of bad news.
Exactly. There's also often this huge emphasis on the power and glory of the leaders, the chiefs, rather than the mission itself.
Which creates incentives not to speak up.
Strong incentives.
Yeah.
Especially hierarchical ones.
Yeah.
You don't question the boss. This is exactly why things like cockpit resource management were developed in aviation to force junior crew members to speak up if they saw something wrong.
So it's not just passive silence, it can be active suppression.
Absolutely. Bullying managers play a big role here. Westrom points to John R. Bolton's reported use of threats and trying to get rid of people who disagreed with him. That kind of behavior shuts down dissent immediately.
And this leads to certain topics becoming off limits.
Tragically, yes. Think about the patterns in the Jimmy Savile abuse cases at the BBC or Penn State or the Catholic Church scandals. Certain subjects were just not to be discussed, not to be investigated. The information was actively suppressed.
And it happens in political systems, too.
On a terrifying scale sometimes. The famine during China's Great Leap Forward It's a devastating example. Local leaders knew people were starving, but they lied to higher-ups to avoid punishment.
They suppressed the truth.
They suppressed it because it was politically inconvenient, politically incorrect, and millions died as a direct result. The consequences of blocked information can be catastrophic.
It's sobering.
Really sobering. What Westrom ultimately established and what we've been exploring is that information flow isn't just, you know, the plumbing of an organization. It's not just the lifeblood or the nervous system.
It's more than that.
It's a powerful and often very accurate indicator of the organization's true health, its safety, its fundamental culture.
And it's interesting you said his work wasn't immediately embraced.
Yeah, the reaction was apparently quite tepid at first.
Yeah.
But then it just spread. Emergency departments, nuclear power, aviation, oil rigs, you name it.
People realized how fundamental it was.
Exactly. The question, why is information so important? It just doesn't even get asked anymore in many safety critical fields. It's understood.
Right.
And while flow is just one piece of the safety culture puzzle, Westrom argued it gives you a royal road to understanding much else. It shows you how the organization really works, and maybe most importantly, how people inside it are actually treated.
It reveals the true operating system.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
So this really leaves us with a powerful thought, doesn't it? If an organization's ability to actually use its own information is maybe its most important feature, what hidden events or what crucial insights might you be holding on to right now that your organization desperately needs to hear?